chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm very thrilled to have Jason Wells on the show today. Jason is a retired professional basketball player, author, and the founder of the Jason Wells Experience. Jason, I am so delighted to have you on the show today. You and I recently met, right? But for years, people have told us we needed to meet.
Yes. And we still haven't officially met in as far as actual contact. But yes, at least we got this part out of the way.
Absolutely. Well, I cannot wait for our listeners to hear your story. You are just chock full of wisdom. And I just know that our conversation today is going to be really rich. So let's go on and dive in. Tell me a little bit about the way you grew up. And then I want to jump into some other things.
Sure. So inner city boy from Cleveland, Ohio. I spent the first 17 years of my life pretty much not leaving Northeast Ohio unless it was in some type of athletic capacity, basketball capacity. We had our AAU Nationals in Winston-Salem or Orlando one year. For the most part, I was rooted in Cleveland, Ohio, Northeast Ohio. I don't say that as a good or a bad thing. We'll talk about that throughout the course of our time today. Even then, being a youngster, I never looked at it as bad or good. It just was. And I really didn't even know the difference between bad or good. It just was. And so now I'm at a point where I'm able to look back at that and say, you know, for 17 years, I pretty much didn't see anything else. However, what's happened after those 17 years definitely made up for not being able to see a whole lot in those first 17 years. And so when I say inner city, I like to say it to people, whatever you've experienced on your own, if you've had that opportunity or whatever you've seen in a movie or read in a book, I am pretty much from that. I am from not the best place in the world, a lot of negative activity, a lot of negative comments, drugs, guns, gangs, all of those types of things. Just look back and I'm super fortunate just about the opportunity to be able to be somewhat sheltered from that because of basketball. And, just a super quick story, not even really a story, but I was sheltered by the people who were doing a lot of the negative things, which as I look back was probably one of the most foundational things of my upbringing is, you know, I lived two houses from the drug house. And once I got of age, I remember vividly having a conversation with them who were, you know, 5 to 10 years older than me, with them saying, hey, if we ever catch you doing anywhere close to what we do, we're going to beat you down before we give you back to your dad and your grandma so they can beat you down. So, and I look back at that and I just see they saw something in me that for sure I didn't see in myself, but they saw that, you know, there was something different about this kid. He had a way out. So,
Oh, I love that. Wow. That's a powerful story because they could have influenced you to come along right beside them.
Absolutely. Right?
Jason, you and I have talked about this. Your dad was so influential. Donald Edward Wells. And I want to read something really quickly from your book here. You said, I've been playing basketball on an organized basketball team since seventh grade. There would have been no high school basketball, no college basketball, no professional basketball if it were up to me. I wanted to quit the team. Not because I wasn't good, but because I did not like playing for my dad. And so your dad was your coach, right? Yes,
for 1 year.
I think, you know, for you, you had such a great foundation of principles, and we're going to talk about that a lot. So can you dig into your dad a little bit and just tell us the good things about your dad?
Sure. So he's everything. My mom and dad split when I was five, and I went with him, which is probably a little bit
unusual.
Yeah, for sure. But my mom was the breadwinner. My mom was the one who worked. My dad was Mr. Mom. And so when I went with him as a five-year-old and through my young teenage years, and pretty much off until I went into college and even after that, but he taught me what I refer to as authentic manhood, as real manhood. So he taught me, I know how to cook. I'm domestic. I know how to clean. I know how to communicate, which is obviously something that men struggle with just across the board. And it's something that, of course, I can get better at and continue to get better at. But love for myself, love for my family. He taught me all those things. And so unlike some young men who may have a jaded vision of what masculinity and manhood looks like, I was raised by him through these principles that we'll discuss. And then also I have, between mom's dad and dad's side, I have 10 uncles as well. So I had a very, very, very dominant masculine influence, of which I got to see a variety of different things. So as I got older and more mature and started to experience some different things, I got to see what to do, what not to do, you know, how to act, how not to act, and just different things. And so, but that was definitely all rooted by my dad. And yeah, with that coaching story that you started off reading, the rest of that is, I asked him, because he's not a basketball guy. And so one of the things that I tell my audiences early is I fell in love with basketball because my dad was a musician. And people, after they scratch their head and try to figure out what that means, what it means is my dad wasn't an athletic basketball person. So he wasn't vicariously living through me. He wasn't putting any unnecessary pressures or tensions on me. He literally coached me through just being a dad. And that year that he was my coach, I remember asking him, how are you going to be our coach? You don't even know anything about basketball. And he told me something as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old that has just now started to really sit in and propelled me into who I am and what I do right now. In that moment, he told me that a coach is just somebody who takes people to places that they wouldn't be able to go on their own. And that is when I use the word coach. I call everybody coach to this day, whether it's in an athletic space or not. And it's that. It's guiding someone, coaching people through places that they wouldn't be able to necessarily go on their own. And so even as a 12-year-old, he was dropping nuggets.
Well, I do want to get into your basketball career a little bit, but you even, like, his initials, D-E-W, you even use that to say develop, what is it, extraordinary winners.
Yes, and it's funny. So since writing the book, I've actually changed it and morphed it a little bit. So it's been that since 2012. So yes, when people use the phrase, do you in some way, shape, or form, but it's actually very personal for me. And so when my dad passed away in 2003, literally in the middle of my professional career, I used to call him Do Man. That was one of the little nicknames that I would call him. And it was something that divinely came to me and through me through inspiration and kind of a tribute to him. And so I took that and I ran with it. And it was right around the time when rubber bands were coming out. Lance Armstrong had the Live Strong bands and wristbands were popular. I literally got them made and people would ask for them and I would hesitantly give them to them. Like, you know, it's really personal for me. And not until I retired did I come up with that acronym that is foundationally rooted in his initials, which is as close to me as you can get, but applicable for everyone else. So yes, in the book, it says develop extraordinary winners. And since then, I've changed it to develop and empower winners. So still DEW. And you mentioned Simon Sinek before we started recording. And what I got out of studying Simon, studying purpose, is your purpose statement or your why statement should be an action item and then an impact item. So develop and empower winners is the action, so they can inspire and impact the world is the impact. And so I've taken something very close to me and literally used it as my North Star.
Right. Well, you've mentioned Simon Sinek, and of course, every business person out there knows who Simon Sinek is. And you'd said, oh, Simon's my business coach. Really? And you said, no, because I've studied him enough. And, you know, you kind of bring up an interesting point, the why. And you have got a Y in your name.
I do.
K-A-Y-S-O-N.
Yes.
And then you went on to name your kids Jalen and Jaden, and they have Y's in their names.
They do.
Do you think that was on purpose that you were J-A-Y-S-O-N, or did you figure that out later and go, oh, wow, I have a Y?
So I just moved to St. Louis. So I moved here in September of 2016. And I know this because my 40th birthday was in December of 2016. And so in that 3 months, 3.5 months that I was here, I remember vividly having a conversation, calling my mom and telling her, thank you for whatever inspired her to put that Y in my name back in 1976, because obviously it's not the traditional spelling of Jason. But I told her thank you, and because it gave total validation and just legitimacy to who I am, what I believe in, that universal question of why are we here and what are we here for, I started what I refer to as my journey of purpose right around just before that time. And it was just total clarity. And she's on the phone crying, saying, you know, oh, son, this and that. But it was really that. And so even with naming my sons, who were born in 2007 and 2010, I hadn't officially started that journey yet. And where Simon plays into that is, I remember like it was earlier this morning, I was in my condo in Atlanta cleaning it. And you know how YouTube will have like the algorithms of what it suggests that you play next, or what video should play next. I was just cleaning my house. It was on a random shuffle, and Simon's TED Talk, Start With Why, came on, and it just immediately intrigued me. And from that moment, I studied Simon. I listened to every podcast he was on. I watched every video that I could get my hands on. And if we pan just a little bit to my right, I got a picture of Simon Start With Why cover, my The Things We Know But Do Not Do book cover. And then in between it is my first $15 residual check that I got from selling books. And it was just one of those, like, you know, a business that puts up that first dollar bill. Like, I never sat down to write a book, and to know that I've written a book, I'm ready to write book number two, and it was all inspired by him, I just figured I would give him that credit. So yeah.
Jason, now the principles that you learned were your foundation. And I think what you've done, Jason, is you said the same principles that I learned to win in basketball, you can actually apply to business, and you can apply to the rest of your life.
Without a doubt.
So if there are young people that are listening right now, what are some of those tools, even as a young man, Jason, that you put in your tool belt?
I have this activity that I do with parents in one of my workshops, where one of the first questions that we'll ask is, hypothetically, let's fast forward to the end of your child's athletic experience, whatever that is, whether it's high school, whether they have had the opportunity to play in college, or whether they've had the opportunity to play pro. Fast forward to the end of their athletic career. And as a parent, what would you have wanted them to get out of their athletic experience? And obviously, with the statistics and the numbers, we all know that very few will ever make it pro. You know, very few will ever even play in college. Most athletic careers competitively come to an end in high school. It's just the way the numbers go. And so the things that they'll throw out are integrity, work ethic, attitude, how to overcome adversity, how to be a part of a team, how to lead, how to be led. Those are principles. And for me, those are the things that organically were instilled in me through phenomenal coaches that I had, phenomenal experiences playing that I had, teammates, different scenarios. Like my life, when I use the phrase, the journey of purpose, my life has, just like everybody else's life, has all of those things intertwined, and they're so intricately intertwined. But I feel like people do one of two things. I feel like people either try to separate them and isolate them, or they don't realize the strength that comes with all of those things being intertwined. I cannot braid hair at all, but I do know that the power of three gives a strength to that braid that now it makes it more difficult, and rope this the same way. And so when we ask that universal question of why am I here, my big thing, Lisa, that I talk about is I feel like that the biggest reason people struggle with that question of why am I here is because they don't know who they are. And I feel like it's impossible to know why you're here if you don't know who you are. And I do feel like that who you are is rooted in those principles. And, you know, we can talk about it as we continue to move on, the seven principles of purpose that really anchor everything.
Right.
But yeah, it started on the athletic field and court and just an athletic experience, and being able to tap back into those things is where it got started.
That's so awesome. So I want to dive in to another question that I really believe will help our listeners, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be back with Jason Wells. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. Jason, thank you so much for passing me the ball. You said something in the first half. You totally set me up for my next question. So you played professional ball for 13 seasons.
Correct.
Then you decided to retire. So what I see a lot is people oftentimes will have identity crisis, and they'll say, well, I was a professional basketball player. Now, who am I? And so it's dangerous to root your identity in what you do. Because I'm sure you had that moment too. It's like, okay, who am I now?
Gosh, Lisa, it comes back to those principles. And not those principles that I named earlier, or the principles that we'll talk about when we dive into purpose. It's the principles that you as an individual are rooted in. Yes, you're correct. I absolutely went through a phase where, and I'll still even go through a phase, and I'm 9 years removed from being retired. I'll still go through a phase of who am I? I know 3 or 4 years ago, one of my big challenges was I wanted to be seen for more than an athlete. Before LeBron coined the phrase and made it as popular as it is today, I wanted to be more than that. But I can't avoid being the 6'8 athletic guy that people don't ask me, do I play basketball? They ask me who I play for.
Of course.
And so when you're talking about identity, and this is exactly where I'm at right now. So one of the biggest things that breaks my heart, tying in something that I talked about before, and this question here is, there is a pressure and attention that is put on young athletes that exceeds their capacity, their physical capacity, their mental capacity, their emotional capacity. At 12 years old, 13 years old, and I'm just throwing those ages out just to throw some ages out, because it really doesn't matter whether it's 8 or whether it's 18. There's a pressure that's put on athletes to perform, to excel, to win, to have these results. And it starts in the house for the most part. It's these parents. So those questions that we talked about earlier of, you know, hypothetically, let's fast forward to the end of your child's career. What do you want? Those principles. No one ever says, I want my child to win the AAU national championship, or I want my child to get a Division I scholarship. Those are results that if they happen are great, but no one says those things. As an athlete, I feel like it is absolutely imperative that you know who you are outside of the sports you play. The simplest way, not the easiest way. If you remember the book, there's a chapter in the book, Simple Versus Easy. The simplest way to identify your identity is to, again, know who you are. And knowing who you are looks different when you're 8, 9, 10 years old and when you're 18, 19, or 20 years old. But what am I passionate about? What sets me apart from everybody else? You know, how do I overcome adversity? And asking yourself those questions and now being rooted in self-awareness. And now, whenever, and, you know, proverbial ball, it doesn't matter what sport. Mine was basketball. It doesn't matter whether it's football or volleyball or lacrosse or whatever. When that ball stops bouncing, it's still going to be a transition. But what I found is if you're rooted in self-awareness and rooted in who you are and what your identity is outside of the game you play, it makes that transition smoother. And Lisa, I'll finish with this. There's no difference between talking athletics and being attached to your identity than it is being military, being attached to your identity, or business and being attached to your identity, because there are so many C-suite executives, senior leadership team members that are attached to the title and attached to what comes with that. And then all of a sudden, they're not in that title anymore, and they have the same struggles as an athlete would outside of the athletic space. And so being an athlete is just a platform, but it's applicable across the board.
Right. Well, let's dig in, because you talk a lot about purpose, knowing your purpose, knowing your why. Why are you here? You know, who you are. You use purpose as an acronym. Mm. So can you just say what the purpose is an acronym that stands for different things?
Sure. So the first P is passion. The U is uncommon. The R is resilience. The second P is preparation. The O is opportunity. The S is service. And the E is experience. And I jokingly say I'm not smart enough to come up with that. So I say that that was divinely given to me, mixed with the combination of the spelling of my name. And so, I refer to myself as a person of purpose. So that universal question that I've mentioned before of why are we here? Why am I here? What am I here for? However you phrase it. As I mentioned, I feel like the root of that, why people have a challenge with that, is because they don't know who they are, truly know who they are. The acronym, I pose it when I guide people on their own personal journeys of purpose. I pose those things as questions. What are you passionate about? What makes you uncommon? How are you resilient? How has that shown up in your life? How do you prepare to capitalize on the opportunities? Because as you mentioned, and this is what I've found, is specifically with opportunities, it's a mindset thing of, do you see obstacle or do you see opportunity? And it's also a preparation thing, because if you're not prepared for the opportunity, what I've found is one or two things are going to happen. Either you're not going to see it, or you're not going to know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Either one of those things, you automatically overlook the opportunity. So opportunity is kind of a twofold thing, with mindset and tying back into preparation. Who are you serving? Because at the end of the day, it's never about you. When you get to a point where you understand that me putting my feet on the floor is going to drastically change or transform or enhance someone else's life, on those days where you don't feel like putting your feet on the floor, it gives you a different driving purpose. Mm-hmm. And then E is experience. My grandma used to tell me, I'll give you the PG-13 version, but my grandma used to tell me, if you ain't been through nothing, you can't tell me nothing. You know, and it's really simple. And she used to tell me things like, you get knowledge from books and teachers, but you get wisdom from time and experience. You know, you can read a book and you can get knowledge. You can have a teacher and you can get knowledge, but it takes, I was on the phone with one of my guys yesterday, he's 69 years old. And if it's one thing that I've learned, is it takes 69 years to be 69 years old. You can't fast forward that. She used to tell me to sit at the feet of elders, because elders give you that wisdom and experience that you can't get without being there. So
I think I see another book in your future.
Potentially.
Well, I want to talk about something that's difficult for a mm-hmm. lot of us right now. We are in the middle, Jason, of some really tough times. The killing of George Floyd. And I'm sure you have some thoughts around this.
Sure.
I'd love for you just to share your heart. Anything you want to share about that.
Lisa, simple and easy. We use those words as synonyms. And I don't believe that they're antonyms, but I don't believe that they mean the same thing. Although when we hear them in context, we usually go that same route. Simple is actually the more difficult thing to do, which is why I believe people choose to do the easy thing. I'll come back to your question, but I'll set it up by throwing out another analogy and another visual for people. Everyone knows how to lose 20 pounds. consistent diet, consistent workout, consistent rest. Like everyone knows, it's really simple. Mm-hmm. It's just not easy. It's not easy when your friends come out and it's time to go for ice cream or time to go for buffalo wings or whatever it is, or workout time rolls around and it's so easy to do something else. Like it's simple, but it's not easy. And so I set that up by saying, and in no way, shape or form comparing what we're going through now to losing weight, but I do feel like the answers to these things can be more simple than we're making them to be. And the simplicity to me, Lisa, lies in number one, compassion and empathy, which are common buzzwords now in many industries, even in the business industries, these words are buzzwords now, but compassion and empathy of seeing people as people. Of course, this is stemmed around racial inequalities and different things, but this is a people thing. And I feel like compassion and empathy are rooted in listening, which is another foundational principle that if people just got to a point where you listened, but in order to listen, you have to also see the source of where the conversation's coming from as worthy of being listened to. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different things to this. And so my very smart, better half said something one time that made total sense. In order for education to happen, someone must be listening. Right now, I just feel like we're in a place and think about what we have. At its most common core, you have people, a group of people, Black people, who feel unheard, feel unvalued, feel unworthy, or feel like how energy is being projected back to them as if we are unworthy. And if we do something quietly, whisper, it's frowned upon. If we do something at a moderate level, it's frowned upon. Well, anybody, doesn't matter, race, creed, color, nationality, gender, nothing matters. If you have a consistent frustration, a consistent feeling of being devalued, and that just builds up, then what you have is an explosion of all of that coming out. That's natural. Yeah, you're talking about centuries of feeling unvalued, unworthy, you know, in no way, shape or form condoning, especially the things that are harming other people. But I feel like what you're seeing is an explosion of not being heard and the consequences from that.
Mm-hmm. It starts one by one. You know, I really do believe that, Jason. It's each of us starting where we can, where we are. So thank you for sharing your heart on that.
Sure. Can I throw one more thing in, Lisa? Just because I've had my friends who don't look like me reach out in various forms. And the one thing that I can say to especially white people who care about the cause, who care about Black people, who care about equality across the board, I do feel like silence is no longer acceptable. The biggest thing that you can do as a non-Black person, because you'll never know what it's like for me to walk around. You'll never be able to experience that. But I feel like us as friends and for your other friends, I feel like the biggest thing that you can do is in the way that's most comfortable for you, not be silent, not be comfortable in your silence anymore, whether it's a social networking post, you know, whatever that is, to make you comfortable in that. I feel like that's the most important thing, because knowing that you'll never truly feel how I feel and see through my lens, knowing that we have that support. Again, my much smarter than me better half said something just the other day as we were in a conversation. People are comfortable in their racism because people are comfortable in their silence. No longer is, hey, I don't really know what to say. I just don't think that's acceptable anymore. So give me a wave, give me a stand, give me something to let me know that you're there and that is supported.
I love that. Thank you so much for that advice. Thank you. So this is something extra. Mm-hmm. What is the something extra that you have seen in a team member or a coach? I mean, goodness gracious, you've had so many people.
Yeah. Well, I have a phenomenal team, and it's not a large team at this point as we now anchor our footing into the space that we want to be in. So I have what I refer to as three people on my team. We make up a team of four. And so I have Susan Hearn, who does my digital website, marketing design. I have Shelby Glebe. She's less than a year married, so I have to get used to calling her her married name now, who I worked with originally when I moved to St. Louis in the athletic space. And then I have Paul Ware, who is one of my close friends from Ohio. And the three of them together, they collectively bring challenge to me. And that's just something extra, because I've been on teams athletically and I've witnessed teams in businesses not be able to bring that challenge to the board, especially if you're talking about, I hate org charts and hierarchy, but especially if you're talking about, you know, from an employee to employer type scenario where you're working your way up the org chart, that challenge becomes more difficult. I've heard a story about Michael Jordan being the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. And one of the reasons that they haven't had great success, or at least the success that people expect of him, is because he has very few people, if any people, in his corner that are willing to challenge him and say, no, maybe you shouldn't draft him, or maybe you shouldn't make that trade. I think, you know, the way that it's come across to me is he has a bunch of yes men. And the thing that I would like to say about my team and something extra that we bring is, there is a comfort in the relationship of challenge, even if it's me as the air quotes leader. They have a tremendous ability to be able to challenge and at least let their feelings, their thoughts, their emotions be known. And I think we do a phenomenal job collectively of embracing that. So shout out to the squad.
There's a lot packed in there with what you just said. But as a leader, you have to make it a safe place.
Sure.
People to feel like it's okay. I mean, he wants to hear if I have a different view on this.
Sure.
Jason is open to hearing that. Collectively, you're going to come up with something better.
Absolutely.
So is there something that you want to tell our listeners about, or a curriculum that you've come up with?
So I have two platforms that are launching, one on Friday, June 5th, and one on June 10th. So the one on Friday that launches is specifically what we talked about. It's called Elevate Your Game. And it is an athlete-driven workshop curriculum, and it's a building block. If you think college, 100 level, 200 level, 300 level, 400 level, grad school, it's that kind of building block. And it's exactly what you talked about before, Lisa. It is identifying your identity beyond the sports you play. And the three pillars that we'll dig into are health, wealth, and relationships, which as athletes, especially the higher level you move up, you get less and less of true health, mental and physical, and how those things tie into your performance. True wealth of understanding finances, financial literacy, from the basics of assets and liabilities to credit and debt, all the way up to investments. And then true relationships, the people that you do life with, whether that's friends and family, whether that's, you know, becomes your occupational relationships, or whether that is even your romantic relationships. And so anyone can go to the website, which is jasonwells.com, jasonwells.com. And then the one that launches on Wednesday is called Parenting Athletic Professionals, which is an intentional play on words. As we mentioned, so many of these parents are trying to parent professional athletes and buy their way or coach their way or groom their way to their young children being professional athletes, when it's very obvious, especially to me on the backside of my career, it's very obvious that the numbers say that that probably won't happen. But the things that you can do along the way to make sure that everything that is gained out of your child's athletic experience can be applied into whatever industry they transfer into moving forward, you know, as a career, as an occupation. And the three anchors for that are to love, prepare, and challenge. And so we talk about parents, how to love your child, accept who they are. Maybe their idea for their athletic career or their life isn't what you had in mind. So loving them for who they are, accepting them for who they are, prepare, like we talked about, like how to support and care for your children, but then also at the same time, challenge them and let them know there are obstacles, there will be adversities, there will be valleys that you know, understanding the importance of being able to sit in that valley and see sitting on the bench as an opportunity, not just as an obstacle.
Oh, gosh, so good. Well, thank you so much. And I can't wait to dig into those when those come out. But Jason, thank you so much for your time today. This has been such a rich conversation.
I appreciate it.
And you and I will be having more conversations in the future. I just know it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.